Blog Talk Radio.
It's Smoke Signals, brought to you by IndiansBaseballInsider.com and hosted by Tony LaStoria and Jeff Ellis. They're talking Tribe.
Good evening, Tribe fans, and welcome to an edition of Smoke Signals with your host, Tony LaStoria, and also Jeff Ellis, both of us from Indians Baseball Insider and the Scout.com network. Jeff, it's good to be back. I think it's been about 3 or 4 weeks. We've had different things that kind of conflicted with both of us. I myself am coming back from a ridiculous like summer flu thing that I had that prevented us from doing this on Tuesday night. So I'm still a little bit getting over that cold thing. But we're here, and I think it's a good thing to talk about a lot of the changes that are going about with the Indians at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. So trade deadline is tomorrow, but the Indians have already been pretty busy making two trades this week and picking up another player and like a minor deal as well, a non-trade, just kind of getting player for future considerations. So we're going to kind of dive into that tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the players the Indians acquired, because obviously for those who have followed the Indians Baseball Insider over the last several years, you know that our focus generally is largely on the young talent in the draft and the minor leagues coming up and the prospects and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of our bread and butter. So we'll jump into that. We'll also discuss the departures of Murphy and Moss and what that means, who else might be going. And potentially what this means going forward here, you know, have the Indians positioned themselves for any more moves? Have they positioned themselves to make some significant moves in the offseason? What is their grand plan maybe? Is this the first salvo to maybe potentially a larger framework of deals that they're looking to make this offseason? Because I think a lot of us believe this team can still contend with the pitching they have in the window is only going to be long for so long with these guys they have here that they have to try to get some guys. But without further ado, I'll bring in my co-host, Jeff Ellis. And I think, Jeff, a great place to start right off the bat is to kind of go into the Murphy and Kaminsky deal. I think that's the big news of the day right now. Kind of came down the pipeline late last night and really hit the wires early this morning and became official like around the 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock hour. I guess, what are your first impressions? I mean, you wrote a flash analysis piece for the site today. Great piece of work there. What do you think about this deal for the Indians, and why do you think they made it?
You know, I don't think they had any intention to make this trade, and I think it was just kind of a team. You know, I think with the Holiday injury, St. Louis saw something they liked. Maybe they think they can fix the hole in Moss's swing that he's been showing. I mean, a year ago, the guy was one of the premier power hitters in baseball, and he had the hip injury, which I think playing through it kind of made him all out of whack. And I think coming back from the injury and sometimes, I mean, playing through pain often is not the best way to deal with it. And I think, you know, maybe they see what they can fix, but I think they called the Indians. They had a need. You know, Matt Adams is also hurt, so they've got a hole at first and into the outfield. And the Indians said, well, we really don't want to trade him, but we do like this guy. And I think the Cardinals thought about it and said, we'll do it. And I think that's just the way it came down. I don't think this was, you know, we heard about some of the other back and forth with Toronto about a possible Carrasco deal, this or that. I feel like this one happened really quickly. I mean, I was up when Chris Cotello dropped the news and said the Indians and Cardinals are hot on a deal, and it involves Kaminsky. And it seemed to kind of flow pretty – I mean, I ended up going to bed before it was finalized, but it seemed to flow pretty quickly. It just seemed to be a team targeted a guy, and another team placed a demand, and both sides decided okay.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think You know, essentially what happened here, the Indians didn't have to deal Moss. I don't think he was a guy that they were looking to absolutely get out from under. I mean, I know he's had a disappointing year in some respects with the offense, been rather inconsistent. The power hasn't necessarily been there as large as it has been in the past. You know, probably, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think his on-base ability, like he's not walking as much. I mean, I'm not sure what the rates are there, but, you know, stuff like that, you know, just looking at things rather than looking at the numbers and spreadsheets, he hasn't been the player they thought they were going to get. I mean, so, you know, you wonder if he's still coming back from that injury or is that going to be something that's going to affect him long term. I think that realistically they could have held on him for another year, you know, paid him the $8 to $10 million in arbitration and just gone with him next year and, you know, been happy with, you know, 20 homers he potentially would have put up and, you know, somewhere around a 750, hopefully, OPS. Yeah, I guess they would have been fine with that. But what this does is this gives him a lot of versatility, not just with the financial aspects of this payroll, but also the roster. I mean, you know, we all know that coming into the season, they had too many DHs. I mean, essentially, you have Carlos Santana, Nick Swisher, and Brandon Moss all locked into that first base DH spot. You got a guy like Hayden
Murphy
Aguilar.
Should be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, David Murphy, Rayburn should be a DH. I mean, they have so many DHs on his team. And then you got a guy like Jesus Aguilar, who's another kind of a prospect who kind of, you know, actions are speaking louder than words there, that he continues to not get opportunities. He's another guy that's probably a DH type of guy. So they have all these DH types. So I think what this does, it kind of frees that up a little bit and gives them an avenue now. I mean, we're going to see this tonight. Chisenhall was called back up. And, you know, with the departure of Murphy and now Moss, it kind of clears an avenue, I mean, temporarily, for Chisenhall to have a role on this team as a platoon bat from the left side that plays corner, is a corner or utility guy, infield, outfield guy, because he hasn't played in the outfield in Columbus recently. And according to, I think, Antonetti and the Indians today, they even said that he'll play some outfield for them too as well. So I think what you're seeing here is a potential role change for Chisenhall. Not to get into Chisenhall talk, but you're kind of seeing the grand plan here. And now this guy who's out of options next year has a chance to make this team. Now, I said it's a temporary solution because I think it's also opening up a spot where now they have some room to wiggle and maybe make a splash this offseason, not necessarily with a free agent, but with a trade. And, you know, we can kind of get into that a little bit. What the target will be and how they'll go about that. But what this is doing is they're just kind of clearing some payroll, but some roster room, some 40-man space to add some internal options down the stretch here and also add, you know, some guys in the offseason. So I think that it's a good deal. I mean, obviously, this doesn't happen if Kaminsky's not in the deal. You know, they're not going to take, you know, they're not going to trade Brandon Moss for, you know, a run-of-the-mill bat or a top, you know, by a system, you know, like a top 20 spec in a system, you know, top 10 to 20 guy. I mean, Kaminsky is a legitimate top 30, top 50 prospect in baseball, I think. You know, I don't think they go anywhere. I think that was the deciding factor and why they ultimately pulled the trigger here. And as we've seen, it's a seller's market right now. And I think the Indians kind of took advantage of that and use it to their advantage here. Now, I think that they potentially could, you know, I'm not sure there's anybody in general they have on the roster that could do that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to, capitalize on that with another player or two that may surprise us. So what do you think with, Kaminsky, we kind of talked about earlier, I think we were tweeting about a little bit today. I think the way it looks is he's 20, right? Somebody told me he was 22, but I looked and I saw he's 20.
No, he can't be. He was drafted in 2013, so he's only 2 years out of high school. There's no way he's
Somebody said he was 22. I looked at his bio.
No way.
I wanted to make sure that wasn't incorrect. So yeah,
he'll be 21 in September, beginning of September.
Yeah, so I mean, he's age appropriate. Actually, he's younger than the age.
3 years below age level, according to a baseball reference.
So, you know, I mean, this is not a guy that they have to rush. He's not eligible to be rostered anytime soon. If he was a 2013 draft guy, so he would be 13, 14, 15. After the next season, he'd have to – no, after the – he has a couple years for SB roster. So this is
he's
a guy
a,
that –
he's in step with Frazier. You know, they're both
yeah.
high school kids in that draft, and they're
yeah.
both in Lynchburg right now, both having spent
yeah.
their entire years in high A.
So, I mean, there's no rush. Now, obviously, if he goes out and, you know, he's, you know, gangbuster and he just – blowing people away and he's advancing and he's showing he's ready, then so be it. But there's no rush to get this guy there, especially with the guys they have up in Cleveland right now. What this does, though, is it just gives them another piece, which we all know is they have – that's probably their greatest need, is starting pitching depth. Yes, I think that – I think slowly but surely the biggest need is starting to come to the forefront is they need some right-handed power too, or just – some power, just some productive bats in general, whether it's left-handed or right-handed. But I think a right-handed impact bat would do wonders for this team. That if they had that kind of guy in this lineup. So what this does, though, it just gives them more ammo because teams will be more than happy in most cases to part with a high spec that plays at a position for a high spec starting pitching prospect. So, pardon me. So anyway, as I was saying. What do you think is that ETA? I mean, are you looking at this guy potentially, if all things go well, you know, sometime 2017, maybe even 2018?
Yeah, I was the nice thing since we've moved to Scout, I will say, is there's a lot of nice things. One thing in particular is since it's part of a network, I've gotten a chance to get to know a lot of other blogging bases who are a great source of information when you get a guy like Kaminsky. And I was talking today to one of the Cardinals writers, and he was saying that the Cardinals, like the blogging base for them, actually thought that it should be, for those who don't know the Cardinals well, their top prospect is Alex Reyes, the top 25 fireballing pitcher, a really interesting guy. But he was also in high A with Kaminsky, who was their third-rated spec. And the blogging community thought Kaminsky is the guy who's ready to be called up. He should have been called up before Reyes, and he's already more than ready for double A. You know, he might be a late-in-the-year guy. I know the Indians sometimes, like, do that last-month thing where guys kind of spend the last month at AA and then spend the full next year there. You know, maybe I'm crazy, but I could see, like, a late 2017. You know, he especially because he's left-handed, it could totally be one of those things where he comes up if they're playing well and just helps them out of the back of the pen, and then the next year transitions. You know, I'd have to see, you know, if they move a pitcher tomorrow, it changes things to a degree. Or if they move a pitcher at some point. But, I mean, right now that rotation is so locked down that it's almost more like, well, we'll wait and see until they open up a spot. But, I mean, I think you could conceivably see him late 2017, maybe a pen roll. But I'll be curious to see what they do with him. The people in St. Louis are absolutely convinced he's already ready for AA and should be there.
Yeah, he has to be rostered by the end of November 2017. So, yeah, I think that injuries – notwithstanding all those other things that can come into play, if he continues to progress as he has been, you know, we're kind of looking at a track where he'll probably finish the year in Lynchburg, maybe get a short cup of coffee in Akron, depending on the playoff situation at both spots. If Lynchburg somehow squeezes into the playoffs, the playoff race there, I can see him finishing out there, getting the experience in that, whatnot, and also just limiting his innings, those kind of things. But the track should be that he starts in Akron next year and, you know, finishes the year in Akron, unless he just, like I said, goes crazy. Maybe he finishes in Columbus. But, you know, very rarely does that happen with the Indians, unless they have a huge need and they need to push him up and he's just unbelievable. So I think that we're looking at 2016 with Akron and potentially 2017 he's with Columbus. And then sometime in 2017, he could be used in Cleveland if need be, but probably opens in 2018 in Columbus because, you know, it's a whole service time and all that stuff. And then, you know, I've got my date pegged for anywhere in May and June 2018. That's just the way I look at it. You know, 2017 could happen, May or June, depending on how things go the rest of this year and all next year. But I think a good solid estimation would be May. June 2018, which is not as far away as people think. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be done.
It's just funny to think, like, you look at the team now, you know, we've got the five set, you know, unless they do something. We have five guys who are set.
Yeah.
We don't even talk about T.J. House anymore, who I know had struggles, but last year was set in that fifth role. so much so it was Salazar in the minors and not him. So, you know, we talk about, well, I mean, Kaminsky's a great prospect who already established it. Like, well, in 2018, he'll be ready. There may not be a place for him. It's going to be interesting to see how that, I mean, none of those pitchers are free agents by I think, is it after 2020 is the first? No, because Carrasco is going to be the first one to free agency.
I think it's 4 years in Salazar. 15, 16, 17. I think it's 18 or 19 they're signed through. I forget offhand. So, yeah.
It's kind of a, you know, and as you, anyone who's watching, it's like David Price, Toronto is 500 and 8 starts out of first place, and they just traded a top-of-the-line pitching prospect who's pitched for him this year and 2 prospects for 8 starts. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of the whole relative of why the Indian, you know, with all the pitchers off the market, I'm going to be very intrigued to see what happens tomorrow because the Yankees missed and the Dodgers missed and the Giants missed. And all that's left really is Mike Leake in Cincinnati, Jamie Shields in San Diego, well, all the San Diego pitchers in Cleveland. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think they know that they have an extremely valuable asset and won't, much like Moss, they won't hesitate if they get that offer that is, I mean, Kaminsky for Moss, I think we agree, is just unbelievable. That's just one of those shocking.
Yeah.
My first response was, is Kaminsky hurt?
It's a fun situation. Damaged goods. You know, so maybe sometimes you do wonder. Sometimes the team knows something, or maybe in this case they could be desperate and we're willing to pay the price. You know, because of the injury. Sometimes teams scramble a little bit, and they're kind of forced to do what they have to do. Now, yeah, so that kind of does lead into, I guess we can, before, I mean, you know, we don't want to spend a lot of time on the Murphy thing, but I think that, you know, we can kind of lead into, you know, maybe what these other things mean. I mean, you know, if you look up and down this roster, and I think, before I forget about this point, you know, I know you said the 5 are set. We all were all high on TJ House last year. I think it's important to remember that when we look at Cody Anderson. If you look at Cody Anderson, yeah, he's pitching well, but there's some extremely alarming numbers there that make you really have pause. It makes you be appreciative of what he's done so far, but also makes you go, whoa, wait a minute. Let me see this thing play out a little bit longer, you know, that kind of thing. Because, you know, he's not getting anybody on a strikeout. I think his strikeout is like a 3-something, 3.3 or something per
very
nine.
Low.
I think his BABIP is ridiculously low. So, you know, eventually some of those balls that are getting hit are going to find holes and things are going to even out a little bit. So, you know, he's been great so far. I think he's a good potential starting option for the Indians. But in order for that to continue, he's got to actually pitch better than he has. He's been very fortunate so far. I think that's probably the best way to put it.
I think that's fair.
He's been very lucky fair. To have some of those balls hit at people, but he's pitched well. So I mean, you know, gotta give him credit. But I think when you look over down this roster, now I'm just looking at potential guys. I think if you look in the rotation, and you make a good point, you know, do the Indians potentially take advantage of the seller's market? You know, what if somebody, you know, bowls them over for Bauer or Salazar? I don't think Kluber or Carrasco are available. I really don't. They've got them both signed to long-term deals, and they've got them on pretty good contracts. I don't think they're going to get rid of those guys. I think they view both of those guys as cornerstone guys for the next 3-4 years. And you can say the same thing about Bauer and Salazar, because even though those guys aren't signed to long-term deals, they're essentially signed to long-term deals because they're under arbitration control for the next 3-4 years anyway. But their cost isn't controlled like it is with Kluber and Carrasco. And I think we would all agree that Bauer and Salazar are probably below Kluber and Carrasco in terms of value on the team, which doesn't say a lot because, you know, Bauer and Salazar are two pretty damn good pitchers. So, you know, potentially one of those guys does picking up Kaminsky and potentially anybody else coming along and back in a trade make them more, interested in parting with a guy like Salazar or Bauer. You know, what if somebody throws one of the top 10, 20 bats in baseball their way? You know, got somebody that's in AAA, AA, Major League ready, power bat, right side, plays outfield, corner outfield, or something like that.
What happens, or, Aaron Judge of the Yankees, to throw that name out at you, since they've missed on everyone. If you throw, you know, Aaron Judge was 2013 draft as well. A consensus, I want to say top 20, if not top 10, big guy at 6'7", corner outfielder, right-handed power. I mean, that's kind of the ideal right now, isn't it? I think he's in AAA. He might just be in AA, but still, he's in the upper.
I think if you're getting that, I think if you're getting that kind of bat and you're trading a Bauer, a Salazar, you still got to get a frontline pitcher prospect in return as well. Now, I'm not sure if that's going. I'm not sure if you're being outrageous with that, but if you're giving away, you know, I know that Salazar and Bauer aren't to the level of David Price or Johnny Cueto, but those guys are also free agents to be. You know, Salazar and Bauer are on the come, and they're controlled for 3 or 4 or more years. So I think you can get almost as much, or a little bit less, for those guys still. I think you can still demand two pretty high end guys. In return,
I would want more than Cueto got.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I think for 3 years versus 10 starts.
Again, this, you know, we're just kind of throwing this out there. I think, you know, I'm not taking, you know, 90 cents on the dollar for Salazar or Bauer. I want $1.50.
Yeah, exactly. You've got them over the barrel right now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and if they don't give it to you, fine. You just wait till the offseason, which, getting to what I was going to get to a little bit before, I think that's potentially what the Indians are kind of setting themselves up for. You know, they picked up that Stamets guy for Murphy. You know, people are like, why? They already have 5,000 shortstops, and it's probably their deepest position in the minors. Well, if you think about it, now they have the Indians have some potential tools for a deal. You know, Lindor is going to be the shortstop for the next 6-7 years, provided he doesn't, you know, do something crazy and get hurt or he just falls flat in his face. He's going to be the guy. So that means guys like Eric Gonzalez, Jose Ramirez, Stamets, you know, even to a lower degree, guy like Ryan Rodriguez, I guess, you know, those guys are potential trade options. And there's some potential good shortstop guys there. You know, Stamets, I guess, is a pretty highly regarded shortstop, you know, as far as defensive ability goes. You know, it may not hit a lot, but a guy that, you know, could have value to a team looking for a shortstop that plays good defense. Or a guy that's just versatile that can come off the bench and be a utility guy. Who knows? You know, Jose Ramirez, I think we all know, brings some value as an on-base guy when he's going right. You know, steals bases and can move all over the diamond. I mean, he hasn't really played outfield yet, but I'm sure he can play it if you wanted to. He's a guy that can pretty much play anywhere, except for catcher probably, and probably first base because he's too small. But if you had to put him there, I guess you can put him there. And then you got Eric Gonzalez, who's extremely versatile too, and maybe another version of Jose Ramirez. Probably doesn't run as fast, but has a little more power. But is his equal defensively, and is as versatile. So, you know, Indians have some options there where now they can take some of that depth at shortstop, maybe take some of that depth at pitcher. You know, maybe they package Jose Ramirez and Trevor Bauer, and maybe one of their center field prospects, and all of a sudden you have the makings of a deal to go get a right-handed bat, a proven guy, and then not a high-end prospect that has yet to play in the big leagues, a guy that maybe has been around for 2-3 years. You know, who that guy is, who knows? We have the whole offseason in October and November to kind of dig into that a little bit, but that's what I'm saying. They have the pieces now. Well, I'm not saying they have now. I mean, they kind of had it before, but now they have the depth. A little bit more depth, especially with the recent draft and, you know, some other stuff they've done, where they've got, you know, some pieces to withstand, you know, the loss of some of these guys. And I'll be honest with you, Jeff, I outside of Zimmer, I mean, I like the prospects the Indians have in the system, don't get me wrong, but there's nobody in the system outside of probably Zimmer that I would be, you know, I mean, I guess, I can't say much for the new guys. You can't really trade them anyway. But the guys that were drafted, the guys that were part of the system before the season, that were part of this organization when spring training began, you know, outside of Zimmer, there's no one that I would be worried about losing in the right deal. I mean, it's not like in years past.
Yeah, I think
not,
he's the only blue chipper.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like years past where I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to lose this guy or that guy. You know, eventually, you know what? Prospects are prospects, and a great many are going to fail. And I think we've seen it a lot over the last 5-10 years in Cleveland that, you know, a lot of these guys have such great upside, but in the end, so few do live up to it. And, you know, I think that's what they kind of got to look at. I know, and they got to try to strike where the right deals are. And sometimes the right deal is not always there. You gotta take a little bit of a risk and, you know, take a leap of faith. And, you know, if it blows up in your face, it blows up in your face. If it, you know, if you hit a home run, you hit a home run. So I think it's, you know, I think the foundation is being built for a potential interesting off season where they're gonna need to really kind of capitalize and make a few shrewd moves and a few, at least one pretty significant deal to get this team chemistry and the makeup of this roster right to really take advantage of some really good starting pitching. I mean, they've got, you know, five guys right now, plus they've got some depth with House and Tomlin and whoever else. I mean, they've got pitching. They've got starting pitching. That's a great starting point for a contending baseball team. They've got good position players. And they've got, you know, some solid bullpen guys. But there's some final pieces there that they're missing. And I think we all agree is they really do need a couple bats. And that they're going to have to go. And I think they still need a lockdown, dominant arm or two in the bullpen. But, you know, they do need a couple pieces there. But they've got the hardest part done now that with the starting pitching. But they've got to go the next step and get those bats. Because, you know, the time's, you know, the clock's ticking down. Put the control on those guys. I mean, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think they're setting themselves up well. I mean, you know, I talked about the five being locked in place, but I think, you know, you're right. There's four locked in, and the fifth spot is kind of a toss-up. But, you know, the nice thing was at the start of the year, you know, we didn't have as many options, and now you look, you know, Anderson, I'm not ready to throw House, you know, off the heap.
No.
You know, those guys are there. You know, Will Roberts is always doing well, and I mean they're building up depth.
Armando,
so they do
Merritt.
Make it. Yeah, I mean they just keep, and this is the nice thing. Pitching was very barren, and now you would almost say that pitching might be the strength of the system in a weird way, outside of maybe shortstop. Yeah. It has been funny to, you know, just to go back to an earlier point. You know, I've had people go, "Why do they trade for a shortstop when they got Lindor?" It's the same thing. You know, there were people who said Eric Stametz was the best defensive shortstop in baseball in the minor leagues. So if he can hit even a little, if the Indians feel like they can fix his, you know, he's got no power. It's almost a net. It's offensively, it's not a good profile. But if they feel like they can fix that profile and turn him into even a sub-average hitter instead of a well below average hitter, he's a valuable trade asset. I mean, Andrelton Simmons is a top five shortstop, and every year he's a below average hitter. Elvis Andrusius, below average hitter. So the Indians are targeting these areas that have trade value. And then anyone who's seen the trade rumors, they talked about Carlos Gomez before deciding it was so expensive. They've been connected to Ozuna from Florida. I mean, we haven't heard any Yasiel Puig talk, which makes me wonder if they think he's just too much of a mess. They're actively looking for what teams want, you know, what fans want them to look at. I mean, Ozuna has had a rough year, and there's some conditioning stuff that scares me. But Florida is a mess right now, making horrifically bad trade after horrifically bad trade. I would, you know, maybe that's the Indian style. Like, let's just see how cheap we can get this. You know, buy low on a guy who a year ago looked like one of the top 10 future outfielders in baseball. They're setting themselves up. They have the depth. You know, Trevor Bauer, I believe, starts, you know, arbitration this year. So he's one of those guys I do wonder. You know, they've been very open to Trevor Bauer's thinking. They're going out and getting guys, Christian Meyer this year from, you know, the academies. And I know Bauer loves it here, and it's a great fit. And even someone like Casey Weathers, who's trying to resuscitate a career in the minors here, is a similar story. But with him starting to get paid, I think, you know, they can look at a Bauer or a Salazar, because I agree. I think Carrasco and Kluber having contracts, so they're locked up. It's not as much of a concern. But if they can move one of those guys and get that impact bat, I feel like they can look at the minors and be like, we can live with Anderson as our fourth starter and House as our fifth for now, you know. And maybe one of these guys can move quickly and help us. Or maybe, you know, Puko is one of those guys who's always done better than everyone expects. You know, they may not have – you don't replace a Bauer. He's got front-of-the-line potential. But they have these pieces where they can take a small drop at pitcher, a relatively – it's not a small drop. They can take a big drop at pitcher to get an even bigger gain at another position and really fill some of that holes And I think, I mean, the front office seems to know that. The rumors have connected them with every right-handed hitting outfielder.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is, okay, say they were, I mean, just, you know, we're speaking third. I mean, and two, we're not, I just want to make it, I want to make it very clear. We're not saying to give away Bauer or Salazar. I want those guys to stay in the Indians. I think that they make this rotation unbelievable. I think this rotation is only going to get better as these guys continue to develop. Because Bauer, this is really Bauer's first full season in the big leagues, and it's really Salazar's first full season in the big league. So they're kind of, this is like a, still a foundational establishing year. And I think they're going to get better as, and they're already pretty damn good right now. So, you know, and I think Carrasco, this is his first full season starting. So, you know, all three of those guys are going to get better, I think. And this thing, you know, that's a top four. That's a four-man rotation that I like if they stay healthy for the next 3-4 years, no doubt. If they trade one, you know, now it's the top three. But I think that there's some confidence in some of these fifth starting options they have as we kind of ran through the gamut of the options. You know, you got Anderson and House, Tomlin, who potentially will be back next year as an extra option because he didn't really burn through an option this year. He's on the DL all year. You know, you got Pluko, Moramondo, and Merritt, and Roberts, and potentially Kaminsky. I mean, they've developed themselves to have some depth. And then now also, say you have all those guys vying for the fifth spot and as your depth guys, and they trade away a Salazar or a Bauer. Now essentially what you're filling in for is the number four starter. Well, they can go out and get a relatively inexpensive veteran starter. How many starters are out there in the offseason that you can, you know, get for, I mean, I'm not saying cheap, but for, you know, modest amount of money that are number four quality starters? I mean, there's usually a lot of them out there. So, I mean, they can always go that route where they can kind of fill in, you know, find a guy that just gives innings. You know, that kind of thing. I know they tried to go with Gavin Floyd this year. I mean, potentially he might be a guy they bring back on a minor league deal next year. Who knows? He's still hanging around. You know, a guy like that where they can, somebody that just gives innings, hopefully is not a guy, especially if they give him guaranteed money, is not a guy that is coming off too much of a serious injury or lots of questions. But I think that's an avenue they can go, or maybe they have to go like a 2-year route with somebody. There's always a couple guys out there that we kind of scratch our heads and go, that might have been a good fit for the Indians. It wasn't that expensive, you know. So I think that could always be a better way to spend their money as well, especially if they have to use their assets to get that big bat. Because let's be honest, there's no way in hell they are ever going to sign a top free agent bat. It's not happening.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Swisher and Michael Bourne were not top free agent bats. They were middle of the road bats that they had to spend $12-13 million a year, and $15 million of it, I think, is what they're actually averaging out over the last 4 years of their deals. But they had to kind of, for middle of the road bats, that's awfully expensive. You know, for the top bats, you know, you're looking at almost $20 million, $18-20 million per year on average for those guys. And they're just not going to be in play for those kind of bats. They don't have that kind of cash flow and that kind of, you know, ability to draw those kind of players. So to get an impact bat, it has to come via trade. And the two ways in trade is either to get that guy as a prospect by giving up one of your top flight, you know, guys like Bauer, Salazar, those kind of guys, or Carrasco, or, you know, maybe Jason Kipnis. Who knows what they're thinking about doing? Or you have to trade some of your high-end prospects and go out and get a bat. You know, and that's what they may have to do. Maybe they have to trade Brad Zimmer, you know, to go out and maybe you have to package Bradley Zimmer and Danny Salazar and get some absolute stud who's got 3-4 years of control left, who's been amazing. I don't know if that player is available or is out there, but maybe that's what they have to do. But I think that's something they have to explore. And I think we all agree that their greatest need, and we've all been in some way or another saying it, that's been their big need. I know that the field plays the left-handers. I know that 70% of baseball is right-handed pitching and blah, blah, blah. But we see it out time and time again that, you know, their greatest need is right-handed, you know, some right-handed power. and just some bats that are consistent, productive, that they can insert into the middle of this lineup to just make it more, cohesive and strong from start to finish, not having these gaps. I mean, look, they had a platoon option, two platoon guys hitting cleanup. You can't have a platoon hitting cleanup. I know that they've been more or less productive as a platoon this year, but when you have a platoon situation hitting in your four hole, that's a problem. And, those guys should be hitting seventh, eighth, ninth, not fourth or fifth, and that's, it just shows that they don't have that RBI guy, we all kind of, I guess stick our noses up at the RBI stat, but there's some relevancy to the RBI stat. It is kind of a skill, the ability to drive in runs. Some guys don't have that ability. When guys get on base, they change their swing. Some guys just have that ability. When a guy gets on base, they can get him in. And we saw it here in Cleveland. Albert Bell was here, and Manny Ramirez, those kind of guys. And we've seen it with guys in other places, with Miguel Cabrera and other guys. Those guys just smell runs. And when guys get on base, we need that guy here. I think if you find a way to get that guy here, this offense takes a giant leap. Because you've got Jason Kipnis now hitting in that one hole, kind of solidified himself there. And you got Michael Brantley, who is, a solid guy. I think he's kind of come down to earth a little bit this year, hitting that three hole. But you got Lindor in the two hole. All of a sudden, this lineup starts to take hold of itself. If you had that legit RBI guy hitting fourth with some power, now you can kind of, find some placement options in that five and six hole. Hopefully, Jan Gomes comes back and isn't a dud, that kind of thing. They still have to probably get another bat in there, but you can find a roll bat, so to speak, to hit in that five or six spot. There's probably somebody in free agency that they can probably nab for a 1 or 2 year deal to kind of just be a DH power bat or whatever. But whatever. So, what do you think as far as where this lineup has to go? Do you kind of agree with that, or are there some things you would disagree as far as what they need to target? What would you do if this was whatever August or pardon me October? Let's say it's the World Series ending. It's October 26th. The off season starts 3 days after the World Series, so it's October 29th. Our off season is officially underway. We're releasing players and blah blah blah, talking trades. Who are you going out? You don't have to tell me who you're going out and getting. But what are you trying to do?
If I'm, running the team at this point, I view shortstop as locked down, I view second base, I view catcher. I'm still a Santana fan, so I view him as at least one of first base or DH. Beyond that, I would, if I can get a bat for any outfield spot, I'd consider it. I like what Urshela has done defensively, and I'm totally fine running him out there right now, but if you can upgrade him, I think that's, he's a good prospect, but he's not like, it's a guy you would look to upgrade. Like, if you can upgrade, fine. If you can't, great. He works there. So I would just see what's available. I think more than likely it's going to be an outfielder. I would, like I said, Ozuna has had a rough year this year, but Florida is a mess, an absolute mess in every definition of the word, from top to bottom. They're not developing guys well. They're trading away draft picks after 1 year. Colin Moran was the guy picked after Clint Frazier, and they traded him away last year. They're getting rid of talent just to people complain about the Dolans are cheap. Go look at a 13-player deal the Marlins just made. Matt Latos is a pretty solid pitcher. They gave up a first-round pick, which is probably going to be in the high 30s, and a solid pitcher, and got back three relievers just so other teams would take Michael Morse and the contract where he's owed $8 million next year. I would see just how cheap they are, if they would grab how low they'll sell on an Ozuna. I would call the Dodgers if they're really sick of Puig, and I just think him and Mattingly are oil and water. I'm not afraid to roll the dice because he's got a cheap contract. and you could put him out in center. And those would kind of be what I would be looking for. I'd be looking for that right-handed outfield bat, because I think that's what you're going to find easier. Third base is not an easy position to find someone at. You could try to find a first baseman, but, I mean, if I had carte blanche and I was in charge of the Indians, I'd probably just be trying to let Swisher and Bourne go, and then you could move Santana over, and then I would maybe look at first base, but it's just a hard situation.
Yeah, that's a discussion for, I think, another show, the whole Swisher and Bourne thing going into the season, because that's a predicament that's coming up for them, for sure.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, I think the big thing, and, you know, I bring it up often, is the fact that those guys, they have no option. Like, if there's no opt-in, opt-out, it's just that they're playing enough games. And I would love for Swisher or Bourne to rebound and for them to have to pay them $14 million in 2017, because if they have to pay them that money, that means they played in over 500 at-bats and the Indians judge them worthy of it. But as of right now, possibility. You know, it's almost like they're better off letting them go so they don't have to pay them more later.
Well, yeah, and they run the risk where if they suck next year again, but they do hit those thresholds, they're stuck paying them another year. So, yeah, it's a, you know, and then obviously you run the risk where if they're not playing well and they fall just short of that and then they're sitting games late in the year, then they have a grievance potential from the Players Association. I mean, there's so much BS that can come of that, that it's going to be interesting to see what they do if there's a point in the season next year where they just outright release those guys and just, you know, it is what it is. I mean, that's what I think is going to happen. I mean, look, I don't see them releasing either one of those two in the off season. I mean, they're stuck with almost $30 million with both of those for next season. So I can't see them just throwing away $30 million. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. I don't see it with Swisher, maybe Bourne. I think at this point we have to still kind of pencil those guys in as the starter. I mean, Bourne's going to be the center fielder, hit ninth, and Swisher's going to be the DH and hit like seventh or eighth. You know, and then when you look at this lineup, you're looking at probably, you know, I mean, if you're looking at things right now, Urshela hitting eighth, assuming he finishes okay. I mean, maybe they do go out and find a complimentary bat that can play some third base to kind of mix in there at third, kind of take some of the, you know. But then if Chisenhall's on the team, you don't need that because you got that guy that can play some third base and can kind of sit Urshela against some tough righties, that kind of stuff. So then if you got, say, Swisher 7, Urshela 8, Bourne 9, if you got Gomes hitting, say, 6th, Santana 5th, well, you only have one spot to put somebody. That's right field. And that's the outfielder, and that's the four-hitter. So maybe there's only one room for one bat, unless they do something with one of Bourne or Swisher. And that's, you know, it has the potential to be a very interesting offseason. I don't see anything happening on that front where a team willingly takes those guys. I mean, who knows? I mean, I've seen stranger things happen. But, I mean, I think you have to kind of almost go into the thinking where, you know, obviously we all wish that they would be traded, but you just got to go in and say that they're going to be Indians to start next season and they're going to be in the lineup. And in some weird way, you potentially hope that they bounce back and, like you said, makes it worthwhile to kind of hold them all year and they perform. You know, it's a free agent year in some ways for those guys. I'm not sure what Bourne's age is. I think he's like 34, 35 maybe, but or maybe younger than that. So, you know, he could be potentially playing for another contract, you know, but I think he's kind of really hurt his stock no matter what he does next year. But, yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. And also, what they do as far as the bat goes. But, you know, like we said earlier, I think with this move, with these moves, you know, what they're doing is they're collecting assets. You know, they haven't made any huge trades the last couple of years. Last year and this year, you know, with Cabrera last year and getting Zach Walters, and then with Ramsey for Masterson. You know, those aren't big deals. But they collected assets, guys that have major league potential, and some are already in the majors and, you know, helping out a little bit. but are guys that could help the Indians or be pieces to other trades. And I think in the end, it just gives them options. It gives them the ability to include guys in deals and have the ability to backfill with some other options and, have some depth. And, I guess we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do because, these are, a lot of times when they make these moves in July, as we saw last year, it kind of sets the stage and the groundwork for what they're going to do in the offseason. And in some ways, what they do now is all they do, going into the offseason. Like, these moves to get rid of guys, to create spots for guys that are going to play these last 2 months are their moves, where those guys now become part of the team next year. Those guys they bring up now, like Chisholm Hall, Tyler Holt, potentially Sharon Armstrong when he comes up hopefully soon. Whatever other pitcher they bring up, Jesus Aguilar, if he gets a shot finally for an extended period of time, and whoever else. So, Jerry Sands, if Rayburn gets traded, he could potentially be one of those guys that, finally gets a shot to play at a decent amount, and it could be a late bloomer like Casey Blake, a journeyman minor leaguer, never really got a chance, and, turned out to be something decent, at least in a platoon role. So, I guess there's a lot that we can still, for as bad as this season has gone, I mean, it's been a very disappointing season, but I think for as bad as it's gone, there's still some things to kind of pay attention to these last couple months because no matter how you look at it, this team is still set up to contend next year as long as they have that starting staff and that core of position players. They just got to do some tinkering around the edges, and there's a big move or two potentially that they've got to make in the middle of that lineup to get this thing rolling. I mean, is that kind of what you're looking at in the offseason? Maybe a big move or two and then some minor moves around the edges around the periphery of this lineup or team?
And that's the hope. I mean, it feels close. I mean, there's a reason why everyone thought they were going to contend this year. You even look at it statistically, they've still been to this point incredibly unlucky. I mean, that doesn't explain away the issues, but I mean, I've seen national writers say, like, if you put this team on paper and restarted the division, I'd still pick them to win the Central. Losing Gomes for a month and then him not coming back 100% was a killer. Brantley's back's never really been truly healthy.
The whole lineup, aside from Kipnis, is playing below that they did last year.
Yes.
Everybody.
As you said, it's like, who are they losing this offseason?
Nobody.
No one. So it's the same team, and it might be flawed, but they've added a lot more depth to it. So, hopefully with all these additions, they're going to be able to use some of these extra pieces. And, you wish Jose Ramirez would have played better because he would have been a heck of a trade asset for something like that because of the value of a shortstop. But, half the team is pretty solid. Even when I was going through the whole thing, I failed to mention Brantley as your left fielder. But, like I said, we don't know what's going to happen with Bourne or Swish. Hopefully they come back. I've seen Swisher play twice in Akron now. And, he's just trying to get it back. But you don't know what's, it's a disappointment and they're albatross contracts, but there's enough there. Like you talked about, they have the one and the three spot set. And Santana is as much as people hate him, is a good bat even in a down year. He's still a very productive bat to put.
If you have him
hitting
fifth or sixth, I have no problem with him.
Yeah,
I mean, he's really not.
I think I've lost you. You still there, Tony? Well, that long pause was, I think we might have lost Tony at the very tail end here. You know, I'll just finish my thought, and then that'll be, I think, the end of the podcast. But, you know, it's a team that has the pieces. Got the rotation, and it's got some important spots nailed down. If they can get one more bat, and I think they know that, they're targeting that. They've made inquiries, and, you know, have faith. Antonetti has only had control for a few years, and it's for as much as people want to kind of throw him to the wolves. His first draft pick was Lindor. You can't fire. People consider him a continuation of Shapiro, and it's someone new. This is his mark on it, and you can't fire a GM in baseball after 4 years. At least you can't, logically. But you know, the pieces are there. Time will tell. We've got, you know, tomorrow should be crazy with what we've seen already. So sit back, enjoy, and if you're still up, flip over the Oakland game, because there's a small chance, but there's still a chance, that tonight might be Carrasco's last start as an Indian. I know I'm being all hyperbolic, but, you know, flip it on, enjoy the game, and have a good night. We will be back next week, and I'm sure we'll be talking about if anything did or didn't happen, whatever happened. Let's enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you.
No way!